Our theme this hour is the fine line between opposites. For instance, how love and hate can be so closely intertwined with each other. Dorian Sagan and Tyler Volk have written about another pair of apparent opposites. Their book is called Sex and Death, or Death and Sex if you flip the book upside down. Sagan is a science writer who's written the sex part. Volk is a biologist who's tackled the other half, on death. And together they've written a scientific and philosophical, and also playful, meditation on the deep connection between sex and death, which led Anne Strangechamps to wonder...
Do you ever wonder about the chicken and egg question? Which came first, sex or death?
If you define sex as some biologists do, as genetic recombination leading to a new organism, or just as even more simply as genetic recombination, you could argue that there may have been nucleotides on the early Earth or even elsewhere in the solar system that were mixing before there were true cells, which is the minimal unit of life. So theoretically and sort of paradoxically, you might argue that sex could have come even before life. So that would be one answer to the chicken and eggness of it.
Yeah, that's interesting, Dorian, because I would have said death would have to come first because the cells were dying out of necessity, not that they had to die, but that there would not be enough nutrients to support infinite reproduction. But your point is very well taken, that in the pre-life stage, the mixing of nucleic acids to create what we now know as life could be seen as kind of a part of sex. Yeah, good
well,
point.
You write your book and I'll write mine.
Yeah. At face value, sex and death would seem to be opposites. You know, one marks the beginning of the life cycle, the other brings it to a close. Your book suggests that they're actually much more linked than we realize. Tyler, you wrote the book, the half of the book on death. One of the points you make in the book is that we are literally, all of us, dying all the time. That something like, 100,000 cells are in the human body die every second?
Yeah, die every second. So we are really these giant beings that live because there's death going on. So death on these smaller scales of the cells supports our lives on the larger scale.
So we're really programmed to die in every possible sense.
Yeah, the programming happens literally in the cells. So our skin is continually sloughing off. That's the most obvious example. The skin is completely renewing itself about every lunar cycle, about every month. It takes about 30 days for the skin to renew itself. And other parts of the body renew themselves over longer durations or shorter durations, as the case may be. There's cells in our immune system that die if they don't hook on to the parts of the blood that are trying to harm us, let's say either bacteria or other kind of toxic agents. But on the big scale, our bodies are, the programming is a more difficult concept with the large scale body because we're not really programmed to die at a certain age, but we do senesce, we do run down because it has not been worth the evolutionary process enough effort to make our lives longer.
But aren't we supposed to die in order to make room to get out of the way of other generations? Isn't that, evolutionarily speaking, isn't that our job?
Well, I guess as some of us get older and older and draw upon Social Security someday, the younger generations may really wish that the older ones would die as quickly as possible and get out of the way. But that's not the evolutionary reason for death, because it would really serve the evolutionary purpose of reproducing and carrying on your genes to live as long as possible and reproduce as much as possible. However, to keep us alive, to keep our bodies alive, requires cellular repair mechanisms that we have, but some creatures, such as birds, seem to have them even better than mammals do. Birds of the same body weight live much longer than mammals, and it's been shown that they have certain kinds of repair mechanisms in their bodies that mammals do not have. And that costs something in the evolutionary sense. And so there's a trade-off between putting the energy of the body into reproducing as much as possible early on in life versus using some of those resources to keep the body alive for a long time in hopes of reproducing perhaps at a slower rate at an older age. The example I love that shows this so clearly is the example of the 8 species of Pacific salmon in the Northwest U.S. and up in Alaska and Canada that die after reproduction, after mating. Once they've lived in the ocean and have grown to their mature size, they migrate back up to the stream of their birth, which is really extraordinary. They probably can do this through sensing the chemistry of the water of those particular streams. But they go upstream, you know, we think of the salmon swimming these rapids, trying to get over the ladders across the dams, and they change their bodies enlarge, they turn color, the males grow these special jaws, and when they get way upstream and they mate, they die soon after that. And that shows that it was not worth it to have them swim back to the ocean and do this again. It was more worthwhile to put all their effort into this one fantastically arduous swim and mating and be done with it then.
That's Tyler Volk, co-author of the book Sex and Death, talking with Anne Strainchamps. We wanted to give the last word to his co-author, Dorian Sagan, who wrote the half of the book dealing with sex.
One of my favorite quotes is one of the epigraphs. It's from Tallulah Bankhead, "I am as pure as the driven slush."
I prefer the one from G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah, that's a great one.
No, it's not G.K. Chesterton.
It's Lord Chesterfield in the 18th century in his letters to his son on the art of becoming a man of the world and a gentleman, cut to the chase in a sentence still not bested, quote, "The expense is damnable, the pleasure momentary, and the position ludicrous."